There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The Mike Wise Show is back from Ciudad de Mexico after a little Cabo vacation. And we're talking with a very special guest. He's a former player, the father of a current player, one of the smartest people in basketball that I know. He's standing by. But first, Darlene has to thang. And you know that's Espanol for do your thang.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
Gracias, Darlene. Greg Anthony is an NBA analyst for NBA TV and Turner Sports. Grew up in Las Vegas, played for legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV, won a national title in 90. Greg played 11 NBA seasons. I got to know him in New York with the Knicks a little bit, appearing in the 1994 NBA Finals. And he was also a member of the Vancouver Grizzlies, along with four other teams before retiring in 2002. Greg joined ESPN after his playing career, where he worked closely with, yes, the one and only Bruce Bernstein. He's been a constant presence in the NBA media for almost 20 years. He also has a son you may have heard of, Cole Anthony, who plays with, yes, the Orlando Magic. Cole started in North Carolina and is in his second season with Orlando. He's averaging more than 20 a game. Welcome, Greg Anthony.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. How are you and how is it in Mexico City?
I'm telling you, the ball down here isn't the same. We have the Capitanes. The Capitanes have a guy by the name of Alfonso McKinney. I know you're a little bit familiar with him. He played with the Warriors a couple seasons ago. He's trying to get his way back to the league, but that's about it. And they're not even playing here because of COVID protocols. Oh, they're all stuck in Fort Worth and they're playing their season basically on the road. But, you know, it's something. It's something. And as I try to bring basketball to this country, well, with my game, you know they're not going to be in the Olympics soon. Okay. Oh, man.
Well, they're progressing, though. That's important.
It is. It is. A long time ago, I spoke with Grant Hill, and he talked about being the son of a former professional athlete and how guys gave him grief all the time, especially from the toughest part of America, the toughest cities in America. And they'd be like, you don't even need this. I wonder if your son, Cole Anthony, ever had that. And I guess what's it like joining Dell, Curry, Michael Thompson, Gary Payton, and so many others as former players who are now fathers of NBA stars?
I love it. It's an incredible feeling. You know, Cole knew really early on that this is what he wanted to do. And when he knew he wanted to, he wasn't very good. So, you know, it took a while before I could start to see the potential and for him to develop. But, you know, you get to live that journey. And I'm sure for all those guys, like, you know, it creates a stronger connection with your child because of that passion. You always have that. And in our case, you know, we talk a lot. You know, we talk what we call it talking shop. We talk a lot about basketball because he's, you know, I was telling Bruce Bernstein earlier, I said, you know, what was unique about him is I love the game when I, you know, growing up at the age and the stage that he's at, but he's in love with the game. And that's
what's the difference?
Well, when you love something, there are different variables of how that love affects you. There's an unconditionality to the love. There's almost an addiction, an addictive aspect to it. It has to be a part of your fabric. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You wouldn't reminisce with melancholy if you didn't have it. You would be heartbroken. And that's what being, for me, how I look at him with his love. Like he's married to basketball.
When did you
that's his thing.
When did you realize that my son may be an NBA player? Are you talking 12, 13? When did you see a jump where you thought, wait, he's not just a player on an AAU team. He's a guy that's going to go to the next level.
Probably seventh grade going to eighth grade. Is when I saw, because he started to make a physical jump. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you can see, like, the thing about basketball, and Mike, you know this, and Bruce, you know, like, people look at your ability to play, and then other people look at your talent. Like, he didn't know how to play yet, and he wasn't physically gifted up until then. He made that jump. And by that, I mean, there were kids that were more athletic at his level, bigger, they quicker, stronger, all those things. And then eventually he caught up to that. And when he caught up, he also caught up to how to play the game. And that's when I was like, it was around that time. And then I could see him developing. And I said, well, he's going to be big enough physically. He's a really good athlete. And then he also had a great mindset. And we'll talk about that kind of stuff, mindset, later. That's the other aspect of it, that when you, to be a great player, that's really kind of what separates great talent from great player.
Given that my son could play a little bit, he's in fifth grade. And given that I only went as far as junior college and NAIA, I got to think that your son was better at his age. But I guess my basic question, I guess, for any parent of a child that thinks they, whatever, they're a little bit better than the kids their age, or they really love the game and they talk about being an NBA player, all those things, I want to encourage him. In some ways, it doesn't matter to me if he makes it or not, as long as he loves the game like I did. But what do you, like, there's part of me, I'm in the stands going, God damn, but just go to the rack.
Get a
rebound.
You're being a parent.
And so I guess what I'm like, what have you learned through that? Were you that guy that got on your kid so much that you realized, oh, I can't coach Cole because I'm going to be too negative for him? Or did you become that guy that, sat back in the stands and said, he's either going to figure this out on his own or not?
Yeah. There is no either or, really, in that regard. It's kind of, what were you closer to? Because there's no way that you don't coach some, even if it's at the dinner table, right? Like, you're still kind of coaching. But what I did, believe it or not, and I have four incredible kids. Obviously Cole, and then my oldest daughter is a freshman at Harvard.
Yeah.
And she played some basketball, and the same with my young kids. First thing, my philosophy is always, and my wife shared that philosophy, shares it, was let's introduce them to everything and then let them tell you what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And when they make that decision to pursue something, okay, then we go all in. But up until that point, they just, he played baseball, he played soccer, he did all that stuff. So, like, I didn't really push, I didn't really care, to be honest with you. I didn't care what he did. I just wanted him to be a productive person and find some joy and passion in life. That's really what my goals were. My goal was, and that way there would never be any disappointment for me, because that's all I wanted. And that's how we raised them. And he decided in the fifth grade that he came to me after a little league baseball game, and he had just played well. And at the time, I was thinking he might have a better chance at being a baseball player, because he wasn't very good in basketball at this stage. He just hadn't learned how to play. He just wasn't. So he's like the sixth best player on a little travel team in the city. And so he said that, I just want to tell you, I don't want to play baseball anymore. I just want to focus on basketball. And I was actually caught off guard because like I said, he wasn't that good. He hadn't, you know, and I'm talking about, he wasn't that good at all. And he'll, you know, he'll tell you the story.
And like, could he go to his left at least?
He was really raw, but okay. The thing about him was he always had a strong mindset, and he was always determined, and he also always did it hard. Like he was one of those athletes. You didn't have to tell him, you know, once he decided he wanted to do something, you didn't have to tell him he had to do it harder, had to work harder, any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I was shocked. And then, so as I'm going, playing it through my head, as I'm about to talk to him, because, you know, I got to make sure I'm like all in on this for him. Right. Because this is something he's saying he wants to do, even though I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen. And I was like, okay, well, buddy, these are the things we got to work on. In order for you to do that, these are the things you have to do. And the cool thing about that journey,
that's a life lesson
anyway. Like you, all the things he had to do to achieve his goal, everybody has to do in order to achieve theirs. So, you know, it's really the same process. Mm. And so as a parent, this was awesome for me because I had a kid in the fifth grade who already had a passion.
Yeah.
He was in love. That was it for that. I'm telling you, from the fifth grade on, it was about nothing but basketball. And he is still madly in love with it. Like, even more so, which I just find amazing. But like, great players I've been around, that's the one thing I've learned, is that they truly, like, look at a guy like, and I'm not comparing him to anybody like this, but I'm just, you know, it's about their love for the game. Look at, you know, guys like LeBron and Steph Curry, Chris Paul, to see them play at the level they're playing at later in their career, you know how much you have to love it. And you love, when I say in love, you love every aspect of it. You don't just love the game.
Yeah.
You love the practice. You love the training. You love the diet. You fall in love with all of it, man. I'm telling you, that's the difference between, you know, being in love and just loving. That's a big difference.
Before we go to the NBA today and all what's going on, I have to ask you straight up, like, when I was talking about Grant Hill earlier, he said to me one thing that guys from the hood would give him grief, that, you know, sort of like, you didn't come from where I came from, so you don't know what tough is. And I guess, and he said that's such a ridiculous idea, because he said, if you're an NBA player, if you're a black man in America, you want your sons and your daughters to have a better education or a better life than you, depending on where you were. How you grew up. And I wonder how, like, I'm thinking of you, Patrick, all that crew, Derek Harper, all that group of the Knicks. And, you know, you're living in Westchester, practicing up there, you're going to the city, you're living large, your kids are going to the best schools. How do you balance that? Okay, my child is growing up like I never got a chance to, and yet I still have to impart some kind of tough love on him to make sure that, you know, this isn't easy. That to me is, I'll never know what that's like. I mean, I didn't grow up rich. I sure didn't grow up in poverty, but I never knew what real adversity is.
Well, I will tell you this, because that is a really interesting dynamic in terms of what Grant is discussing. But it's relative. It doesn't matter where you raise your kids. Your goal is the same. Mm-hmm. And so it might be adjusted, right? Like, you're right. Cole went to private schools since he was three. Like, yeah, he had a full-time nanny and housekeeper. Like, you know, he grew up affluent. He just did. I mean, like, there was no other way for him to grow up. You know, it's just, there wasn't. So it's relative from the standpoint, the one great thing about it was the game he played when he started off, he played on little leagues on the Upper East Side. Like, so, you know, what that demographic was all the kids he was out hanging out and playing with, right? Because he didn't matter. He couldn't play anyway. Three, you know, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years old, whatever age that is. And then as you start to get a little better, you start to play against better competition. And so, well, then you got to venture out a little bit. And so that's kind of the approach we took. And because of that, he was comfortable in that environment. So he didn't just burst on the scene. You know what I mean? Like, he grew up around all these kids, like,
sure,
you know, since the third, fourth grade. And then once you get to a certain level in basketball, now you only play against the best kids. Like, that's the advantage these kids have that we never experienced. And like, people poo-poo it, like, oh, that's one of, you know, they say, oh, well, these guys don't compete against each other. That's crazy. They do. They've actually competed against each other longer.
Right.
They've been competing against each other. Like, there are guys that Cole's playing against, he's been playing against since the sixth, seventh, eighth grade.
Yeah, you go into the AAU National Championships with your team, and if that team's decent, and you're right, you're facing a handful of guys that you have no idea at the time, but they're going to end up in the league. And and you're right. And it isn't like old school, like a Jerry Tarkanian or a Bobby Knight or something like that. They had to somehow, if someone wasn't coming to them, they had to find you.
Yeah. Well, the evaluation process wasn't nearly as good because of that, because you didn't have a point of reference.
Yeah.
And as an example, when I was coming up, I was a pretty good player, but on the West Coast, let's say I was, you know, in the conversation, be the best point guard on the West Coast or whatever it is. You wouldn't even know you wouldn't have played against the best point guard on the East Coast.
No.
You might not even know what he looks like, because the only way you got to see players back then was Street Smith, whereas a little old photo, passport photo of a guy that was really blurry, and you couldn't really make out who he was. You could read the bio and it would just tell you his name, his height, and where he went to school. And that was it.
Yeah.
And you might
now you can Google guys. Now you can Google guys' video on YouTube.
Yeah, but those guys all play against each other. Like, that's why. Like, that's what. And then some guys, you know, they hit early. They get out ahead of the pack per se, and then they fall back, and other guys surpass them. And that's kind of that journey that you see with these young kids, because when you're in the seventh grade, you might not be the best kid in the country by the time you get to the ninth grade.
Yeah.
You know, you just like it, it changes that much. And so, yeah, it's interesting. These kids today, that's why you see them playing at the levels they play at when they first get there. You know, and by that, I mean, we look at a kid that can come out of 1 year of college and go and actually have an impact in an NBA game. Now it's commonplace, right? But like, you would have never thought that 20, 30 years ago.
No.
It would have never crossed your mind that something like that was even plausible. I mean, you know, Magic was the first guy that I can recall, and there were others, obviously, but not very few. But he was the first guy that actually had an impact at that age. You know,
yes.
He and Isaiah, I mean, where he came in from day one and he was one of those guys, that didn't happen very often.
No, not at that age. I guess a good segue. I mean, LeBron James, right out of high school, turns 37 years old at the end of December. Yeah. He's always seemed indestructible to me, you know, but now as 19 years, he's been battling various ailments. And, you know, as of this past Monday, he's missed half of the Lakers' 24 games. Should we be concerned that all the wear and tear of almost 1,600 games over the guy's career with playoffs and regular season is finally catching up to him?
Yes. Yes, I think you, and it's, well, you just said it, since he's been in LA, but for the championship year, he's dealt with significant injury and absence.
Yep.
He just has, you know, and so it's funny. It's sometimes you just, your eyes, you don't want to believe what your eyes are telling. And then if you want a statistical, you want some stats to kind of back it up. Look at his field goal attempts and the percentage of threes he takes now. I think he's up to 9.
Wow.
So he might be taking as many three-pointers as he is. Now, think about LeBron James, a guy never noted as a great shooter, right? That's not what his strength would be. And now he's taking more attempts from the three-point than he is from the two-point.
It's crazy. Someone once told me that, you know, people don't want to think about it, especially elite players, but your joints, your cartilage, they have expiration dates. And I look at him and I think, I think they only have like a year, 2 year window to win a championship again, you know, a LeBron led championship.
Yeah.
And which, you know, I get it. I mean, Michael won his last one at what, 36? So yeah. it would be a feat of incredible, you know, especially with all the way the Warriors are playing and all the other teams that are coming up. But you see him winning another one or no?
Man, I thought coming into this year, it was possible. And I thought that and just based on history, I knew Westbrook would struggle the first 20 games. Because if you just go look at what he did in Washington and what he did in OKC, I'm sorry, in Houston, the first 20 games, just go look at his numbers, that he was atrocious, just like he was here. But then he started to figure it out, you know? And so I was like, so I wasn't worried about that. Yeah. But the two bigger issues are Anthony Davis seems to be flatlining, meaning like he doesn't seem to be still improving.
Sometimes like, he doesn't even look, he looks disinterested sometimes.
Yeah. Now, and I'm saying that now, this, he has of late started to get back to, yeah, what he was. But if you go off of last year, think about it. He had lowest field goal, lowest points per game since I think his second year in the league.
Yes.
Rebounds, lowest of his career. You know, he was still, you know, not as aggressive. Wasn't, I think he had the lowest field goal attempt since his third year. So like when you see stuff, now he got hurt that year and that maybe that explains some of it, because he was hurt that year and he missed a ton of time, but he was not good that year. He started off horribly as well early this season. So now he's starting to get it going. But then LeBron's health, like, you know, he's got to be out there. He doesn't have to be the LeBron of old. He can be an old LeBron, but he can't be an absent LeBron, because now this team doesn't have a chance. They can't get better. They, you know, like people, and an average fan doesn't understand that, you know, a season is like a race, and some teams start the race with a head start, right? Golden State and Phoenix have a head start. Phoenix, as we saw, because they were a finals team a year ago, and a lot of their best players were really young, and they're going to get better because of the opportunity, right? Golden State was the one that's probably a little surprising.
Yep.
But when you get beyond those two teams, and if you really, just from a basketball standpoint, you look at the records of a lot of these other teams, nobody else is like playing great basketball.
No.
You know, there's nobody. So relative to that, that also helps the Lakers' case. But ultimately, if LeBron isn't out there, because they can't define who they're going to be, they can't develop an identity, they can't establish a rotation, like all that, that means that they're falling further behind in the race. They're not closing ground.
Well, and I think you hit it on the
challenge.
You hit the nail on the head when you said LeBron doesn't have to be there all the time, but he has to be on the floor at some point.
Yeah.
You look at that team, all their key guys are over 30. Westbrook's now 33. You know, the role player, Melo, the role player is 37. Dwight Howard's 35. And you can't, in the old days, like the late, like Shaq and Kobe, as they became veterans during that second and third championships, they almost knew that their bodies had to be right and ready for April, May, and June. They, and sometimes they took days, well, Kobe didn't, but you could see that team taking days off during their second and third championship runs and just getting them and making sure guys got healthy. Lakers don't have that kind of wealth of talent. They don't have that reservoir, to do that. And so I think that you're right. I think this is it for them. This year, yeah, and maybe next.
I'm with you on the 2 year window. I think too, we also have to remember, this is where we sometimes get trapped in, you know, where we were when we thought the game was, or we thought the best player played the game or all these other things. This is why it's hard to compare eras, man. when I played 32, 33, you weren't getting better, or you weren't going to be able to sustain your peak for as long a period of time. You weren't. So like you, when you say a guy's 32 today, 32 today is like 28, 29, 20 years ago. Ain't 32 ain't like, you're not old. Steph Curry's 33.
Yes.
You got to have perspective here. Like, so you can't say when a guy's, that's my point about Westbrook's 32.
Yeah.
But man, Westbrook ain't slowing down. I mean, relative to how he still can play at a high level. Now he's got to think the game better, but physically he ain't really, he's fine. LeBron didn't slow down at 33. We're talking about LeBron, an injured LeBron at 36. You know, like, so the peak is a lot longer today. These guys, Chris Paul, like, these guys can play at a much higher level for a longer time. Some of that is the way the game is played, because now there's more skill. And again, this is the thing, like, people would complain about the game when I played and say, oh, that was a better era. It was way too physical. It was more like football. You could play in our era and not be as skilled.
Right, right.
You can't do that today.
No, I look at some of your teammates even. Like, well, Anthony Mason developed skill, but there was some guys. I mean, I look, you know, I'm trying to think. Not Oakley. He had a little bit of skill, but even though you measured his vertical with a Metro card, I mean, he was, like, I look at some of the guys, like, you had, guys were hand-checking by putting a forearm in a guy's neck. That was part of the game, and it wasn't even thought of as dirty. It was just sort of, we're taking the court away from this player. And so I look at it now, and I kind of like it. I mean, I like the passing. I don't love that the whole game has become 3-and-D. I still love it when people work the ball around and you still got, you know, that dude inside that just has a nice baby hook or something, or a Ewing presence. But it's amazing to me, like, the ball moves a lot more than it used to.
Yeah, the skill's higher, the court's bigger. That's the biggest thing that, you know, that sometimes you got to remember. The court's a lot bigger than it used to be because of where guys could, and that's my point about skill. So, you know, you take a game that was played in a, you know, a 20 by 15 box, and now it's played in a 40 by 24 box. You know, like, now when you're guarding a guy, we didn't guard you at 35 feet.
No.
So when we started to guard, we had help right there. At 35 feet, 38 feet, you don't have help. You know, and, you know, you talk about that three-point shot. Like, that's part of that is the threat of it. But you still have a lot of mid-range activity. You don't have the back-to-the-basket basketball. But what's been proven is that's, it's just not as efficient. You know, the skill level of these guards now, like, you know, you look at Steph Curry, who would you rather have shoot the ball? Would you rather give it to Steph, or would you rather give it to Shaq at 6 feet?
Right. No, you make my argument perfectly. I always talk about, like, the Warriors are coming down and breaking the finals, and KD, you know, anything in anybody that ever played the game's mind is you hit the open man, and if he's close to the basket, you certainly hit him. KD puts his finger up like, shoot it. Like, I could get a layup or a dunk here, but as Steph Curry's going down the right left wing, and and KD's on the right, and it's in the finals, and he goes, like, put the ball up. And I was like, wow, this game has changed. He understands that Steph Curry is going to make that shot and they're going to get another point out of it. It's crazy. But that's where the game is. You're right. It's I mean, when you started in the NBA 30 years ago, guys like Drazen Petrovic, Vlade, they were just beginning to make their mark. Yeah. I look at all this influx of players from countries now, and in some way they affected the style of the play in the NBA too.
Yeah, everybody's played a role in it, because what you got to remember what the goal is. You're trying to perfect. You're trying to create the best game you can create, you know, and if you're doing your job, you're looking at how the game is played all over the world. And it's okay if they have better rules or a couple rules that make more sense in our game. And so I think that's what's happened. I think you're 100% right. I think there's still other areas that we can you know, looked. I love the goaltend game or non-goaltend game of the European game.
Yeah.
Like, I think of the international game, I should say. I think that's something else that we should look at. But yeah, our game is, it's a beautiful game. And it's also, it's funny how the roles in some respects reverse, but like it used to be, you played the game from the inside out.
Yes.
You just did. And in some regards, and I try to explain this to people, you kind of still do. Because if you think about a half court offense, even if you go look at threes, the best threes outside, I'm not going to talk about the Curry. I'm talking about normal shooting, not what Curry and Durant and some of the special players can do. But the majority of those threes are created when the ball gets to the paint.
Yeah, the kick and dish.
You still, in essence, are playing with the impact of the paint. It's just that, you know, before when it got in the paint, that's where the majority of the shots are going to be created. Now they're created, you know, outside of the paint, outside that three-point line. And so, yeah, it's a fun game to watch, man. I really love it. And it's also more like chess now. Like if you watch how you have to defend teams, you know, and because your wings and bigs have to be able to play in space. And it's an incredible game. And that I wish we'd get into more, because that's the thing that sometimes gets lost is when you look at the high level teams, that's what those guys are doing, man. Phoenix and Golden State, they're playing chess.
Yes.
You know, because they both respect, they know like both teams are capable, man. So it's fun.
Well, when you talk about skill level, like there's few players that maybe none that I can remember even back in the day that had so much ball handling ability and shooting and everything. This is the part of the fan in me that is basically pissed off that Kyrie's not playing. Like, come on, man, you are just fun to watch. Where are you on this take? I mean, if you were one of his teammates, would you be pissed at him for the way he's handled his responsibilities to his team with this thing? Or would you just say, man's got to be a man. He's got to stand up for his beliefs. We'll take care of the rest. Where are you on that?
Well, the thing about being on a team is that you're going to always support your teammates. Unless they've done something that you feel like is egregious. And when I look at this situation, first of all, and I'm fully disclosed, I'm vaccinated. Like I'm completely vaccinated, got a couple shots, will probably get a booster, right? So I get that part, but my thing is I do see the other side. I think that's what's wrong sometimes, that we don't allow ourselves to see it from someone else's perspective. So I can just see why some people wouldn't want to get the vaccine. I can understand that. I don't think they're evil. I don't think they're villains. I just think they're making a free choice, and I'm not going to condemn them for it. And so I get that. So I look at it from the standpoint, if you're telling the Brooklyn Nets, if you're telling Kevin Durant and James Harden, I want to win a championship. Our goal is to win a championship. And then you decide, well, you know what? We're not going to even let you play in the half games that you can play. We don't want you around. I mean, that
you think, that's on the franchise?
Shocking. Absolutely on the franchise. Absolutely on the franchise. Well, again, I ask you, you tell me, Mike, what do you think the goal of Brooklyn Nets was coming into the season?
Well, I obviously winning it all.
No, it's okay.
Winning it all is when you've got that roster.
When you go make that trade for James Harden, what are you saying to everybody? We're trying to win it now, right?
Yes. Yeah, we have a window.
Your answer to win it now is to say, well, we're not, whether it's your right, we're not going to respect your right. We're just going to send you away. You can put out whatever statement you want.
Yeah.
But we're going to send you away and not allow you to be a part of this team.
Yeah.
Those two don't seem to coexist. They don't seem to work together for me.
But you would actually have him playing half the time. I look at it like this. If you believe in what the CDC and everybody else is saying, do you want that one, unless he's been sequestered himself, do you want that one dude to turn your roster into a COVID
city if he's
not vaccinated?
Oh, you mean like what's going on in Charlotte?
Exactly. I'm just saying, like, so I'm just saying, if Kyrie gets infected and he infects.
Yeah, but they're already vaccinated, though.
Oh, I'm saying, but there's guys who have contracted it that have been vaccinated.
No, I mean, exactly. That's my point. My point, yeah. Mike, is whether you have the vaccine or not, you can contract it and you can give it to people.
Yeah.
From what I'm understanding. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're right, but you're more so, but you're nine times more likely, according to the CDC and all these medical experts, to give it to somebody. I mean, to give it to somebody if you're not vaccinated.
So again, I'm not here to say one way is right or wrong. I'm right. just saying that wouldn't be the approach I would take.
Right. No. Right now, you're doing the Joe Rogan, Aaron Rodgers thing. Is what you're doing? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just doing, like I said, I'm vaccinated, but
yeah, so am I.
I can just see it from their perspective, and I just know that this is not giving them their best chance of winning a championship this year.
Yeah, I get that. I could see putting some of it on the organization. I just
that's my
thing with Kyrie is like, if you're medically prevented, like your doctor said, no, I could understand it, but if it's just a personal belief. I mean, it's
so for you, your personal belief should not count. You should be.
No, I think your personal belief, if it's something, if the conviction for your personal belief is I'm not standing for the anthem, fine. Or I'm Muslim. And I think that this is not my anthem. This fine. You know, like I always thought Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf got wronged. And I'm all okay with all that. What I don't get is, is this your hill to die on? Like this is a man who's like, I think he's Hall of Fame bound. And I think he not only has the skill, he has the heart, the passion. I just bother, you know, and you know what, Greg, it's the selfish part of me. I'm a fan.
I'm with you.
I want to see him play because I'm a selfish fan. I want to see Kyrie play because I know how good he is.
I'm with you though, Mike. I hate that we're here. Yeah. I want to see him out there. I think he's as gifted a basketball player offensively, probably as we've ever seen.
Right? Yeah.
Because it's more impressive when you're his size and Steph Curry's size to be that good than it is, like, because Durant has a distinct advantage at 6'11". Now he's got this, and he's got that skill set. So he's as quick and as good to handle those guys, but nobody his size can guard him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but there are guys that are going to be Steph's size and Kyrie's size that can actually physically match up with them. And he's still got to deal with those big guys. And what he does, man, he's virtuoso on the floor with his ball with the ball in his hands, his footwork and his ball handling, his ability to finish and to shoot. And that's the thing, like when you just break down every aspect of his skill set, I've never seen a more complete offensive guard. And by that, I'm not saying he's the best. What I'm saying is his skill set across the board is the best the game has ever seen.
It's
and
incredible.
I just don't want it to be, because I know somebody's going to say, oh, he just said Kyrie's the best point, the best guard ever. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying his skill set.
Yeah.
His ability, because of how good he is at all areas, off the dribble, footwork, strength, finishing. I mean, he's incredible, man.
Well, I just look back and, like, you know, to me, especially when you're young, you know, and you were a southpaw, but you know, you got to use your right hand, and like, you know, but the bottom line is when your offhand becomes just as good as your right, you know, as the hand you use all the time. That to me is the, you know, like I remember Armon Gillian, remember your RIP, rest in peace. Oh man. No, I know he like, for whatever reason, man, he shot the ball left-handed as well as any right-handed player I've seen. And so I look at that and I look at Steph, Kyrie, I can't believe that they're, you know, that you could sort of throw up a left-handed float or be right-handed and that ball could, you know, go off the glass from 8 feet in with 6'11" mounds of muscle hanging on you. And so I'm always blown away by that. I, you know, because obviously it is a personal belief conviction for him. Where are you on, you know, where I kind of know, you know, as someone who's always been politically active, how do you feel the league is done with regard to encouraging players to have a voice on societal issues?
I love it. Yeah. Like, that's kind of my point. Like, you can't, like.
Yeah, who are we to like say you?
Point.
That's a very good point. Like, yeah, just because we don't like where Kyrie's coming from, we should still be able to support him in a way that we would if we liked where he was coming.
Yeah, that's amen. Like, my whole thing is the problem I have with society to a certain extent, and it's my point I made. That's why I said I've been vaccinated. So you can't say I'm an anti-vaxxer when I take this stance.
Sure.
Because the problem is, when people disagree, they can't just disagree. Now you got to be wrong and evil.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
like,
you're
that's
right.
That's the problem. Like, we can't just disagree. Like, you know, you could be pro-life or pro-choice. And
it doesn't have to be. You don't have to demonize the other side.
Yeah, it doesn't make you evil because you're on one side or the other, and that's the problem I have. And that's what, in essence, this is being built. Now, I will say this: we don't know the inner workings in Brooklyn. We don't know if there are issues. I mean, we do know that there have been some issues with Kyrie there, right? But we don't know if it's to a point where the coaching staff, which I still can't. There's no way in hell that Steve Nash isn't involved in those conversations before those decisions are made.
Oh, definitely.
You know, like, so that plays a role in it. So that's telling you that this is, from the coaching staff on up, everybody's on board with this.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe I would also say I'd find it highly surprising if Durant and Harden were at least aware. I'm not saying they had a say, but they probably had some understanding as to the dynamic and what the potential scenarios could be.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And you wonder how much people's own personal political beliefs drive some of these decisions. You're right. I think you have opened my mind up to one thing. It is one thing to say, look, you can't play, not only because of laws in New York, but because of where we are. It's another thing to say you're persona non grata and you're not part of this team.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. There's a line there that, you know, you're basically where Kyrie is. Everybody's saying he's got to be traded. Well, you're also making that decision too. If you're not including him in anything, and you're not, you know, waiting for him either to figure this out or at least be part of your team in some other way on the floor. That's fair. Before we end this with Cole and you and mindsets and how it has to be on, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. You're a guy who's been. You've been politically active with the Republican Party since your days at UNLV. And correct me if I'm wrong, you got a degree in political science and you were like the vice chairman of Nevada's Young Republicans in college.
Absolutely. Yes, that's true. That is true.
So where are you in the, I mean, if I'm allowed to ask, where are you in the Republican Party? Because I know you endorsed Mitt Romney. Where do you think they are right now? I mean, it's frightening to me, not just the Republican Party, but anybody, the militancy, like you said, in this country is just flat out scaring me. I mean, you're right. You it's almost like you got to be true to your school no matter what the person does that's in your party. And I'm like, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's morally wrong. And so I think it's both ways. Okay.
I do think what you said is true. I think the biggest issue in America is the polarization of politics. And our media plays a significant role in that. In regards, I mean, just if you look at the raw numbers, think about when you were a kid growing up, you saw the news was on at 6 o'clock and then 11 o'clock. And there'd be morning news shows on, but you know, you weren't consumed by news, right?
No. And the guys who are delivering the news were actually like, they were,
yeah, they weren't political.
There was no advocacy journalism. You just read the news.
You didn't have that. And so then you juxtapose that with where we are today, where you have multiple 24-hour news cycles on television, the internet, social media. You have all these elements out there that now have allowed us to define the left and the right by the extremes of the party, because they're equally dangerous. When you look at where America is, because 80% of America is, I would say there is actually a consensus there on, if you just talk about what people believe in, how they feel, if you looked at all these issues that we have in our country, 80% of us would be on point with the vast majority of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that we let the 10% on the left and the right now define both sides. And because of that, that's where the vitriol and the hate comes from. It's just, that's just the reality. And so, like, that's for me, I'm not political. I mean, I have my philosophy and my beliefs, but my stuff was never personal. And I think that's where we are in our society. We've allowed the politics to become polarized and personal. You know, you used to be able to agree to disagree, but now you can't even have a conversation politically because it's like you're either evil or good.
Right. Well, and yeah, so if you're black and you don't vote for Obama, you're suddenly, oh, you're an Uncle Tom. What's wrong with you? And no, actually, maybe you have different political beliefs. You know, it's like it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, I get that. So do you consider yourself a Republican now still?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I absolutely do. But that I'm not. And nor have I ever been. I'm not like an extremist. Like I'm actually socially, I'm just fiscally conservative. That's always been my take. Like you mentioned earlier, like my degree's in political science. Like I study this stuff. I don't vote for people. Okay. Yeah. I vote for like policy and what I believe fundamentally in terms of what the country's about. Like that's where I vote on that stuff. Like and that's the other thing. Like when I say it's become more personal, because now you have so much focus on things that really I don't really have an opinion on nor care. I'm a rule of law kind of guy. So even if I disagree with some, if that's the rule of the law, well, that's the rule of the law. Like, you know, I'm saying the law of the land, I should say. If you know, if I dislike a rule or a law and that's the law of the land, then I say, you know what, I respect the law of the land and I just move on. I mean, that's kind of how I approach it. So I'm not militant, I'm not into all of that stuff. I have my principles and my beliefs and my philosophies, and I have a social conscience, and I also have a fiscal reality of how I think things should go. And you know what? Sometimes it's with the majority of the country. Sometimes it's not. That's the way I look at it.
All right. We're talking with Greg Anthony, the candidate for the 2024 U.S. presidential Republican nomination.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, that ain't going to ever happen, brother.
All right. I'm going to end this with, because I love the father-son story. When you're talking shop with Cole, does part of that become not just, hey man, this guy's going to try and lock you down. There's another level of, look, you're going to hit a wall here, or look, mental toughness is part of being physically tough in this league. Where that whole mindset of what makes a successful NBA player, a possible future Hall of Famer, a journeyman, a player that could, you know, a role player on a championship team.
Yeah.
What makes that and where does that come in when you guys talk shop?
Well, you know, with Cole, he's always aspired to be great. Like Cole, you know, when I was coming up, my goal was to make it to the league so I could make it. You know, I grew up impoverished. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom had four kids by three different dads. I never saw a picture of my dad, never met him. You know, like that was my way out. And then the opportunity to play in the NBA, that was like, for me, that was it. I didn't, like I said to you guys earlier, like I love the game, but it was more about I love the game because I, you know, you love it, but also I love it because of what it provided me, the opportunity. I mean, to this day, you know, the game of basketball is showing me love and a huge part of my life. Whereas with Cole always wanted to be a great, he wants to be an all-time great. Like, he has a different mindset. And that we touched on mindset. And so, like, I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of great players. And the thing that sometimes always gets lost, you know, people will focus on, you know, your physical being and like what you look like and the things you can do physically. And sometimes they lose sight of what really makes the great ones great is their mindset, you know, and how they approach it and how they can function in moments, you know. And so he's always had that about him. And it really showed to me how it was when he finally went through like major adversity, you know, like his whole narrative coming out. And I actually put this on Twitter a lot. His whole narrative coming out was out of college was, you know, he's a poor decision maker, bad shot selection, you know, he's a scorer that can't score. What, you know, like a lot of negative stuff. And I've said this as well, you know what? A lot of that was warranted because of how he played that year. Because that's exactly what he was that year. And so people, that narrative carried over with him, you know, going through the injuries with the torn meniscus. Like, there was a time where he didn't even want to, he was allowing it to kind of affect him. And he didn't even want to come back initially because he was acting on emotion, you know, when he first had it. I mean, he cried like a baby when he, you know, was getting ready to have a surgery and before. I mean, he cried like a baby many times, right? During that whole process, you know, and he just couldn't figure out. Like, he's like, I've been that guy all these years. And like, it's like nobody remembers that now. And I was like, part of that is like, not everybody puts any emphasis on things and they don't understand that. And I said, you know what? You're going to still get an opportunity. You just got to continue to believe in yourself. He's like, that's never been an issue. I know what I am and who I can be. And so, you know, he just worked. And, you know, last year, or his rookie year, you know, he didn't get a summer league. You know, like, when you're a one and done kid coming off an injury, you know, that's a one time where they're going to give you the ball in a situation. Now he's going to kind of be on a level playing field because, you know, and he had a great experience overall at Carolina and playing for Coach Williams. And those kids, I got to tell you, I've never been around a better group of kids, but we just weren't very good. And he wasn't very good. And a lot of that was on him, but he had never been on a bad team before. And so he didn't handle it well. And I told him, look, you're going to pay a price. But ultimately, you know, he didn't get that stuff. Then he gets thrown in when Markel goes down. And again, he wasn't ready, nowhere near being ready. But what he actually was very fortunate. What happened was he cracked a rib and he ended up being out an extended period of time. And he got to watch the NBA game played up close and personal. And he got to slow the game down and he got to start to see himself and visualize and understand where he needed to get better, all those things. And then he got to have some success over the latter part of that season, you know? And so now, you know, he finished his last game. I think he had 37 against Philly and lost, but you know, and it wasn't that he shot it great, but you know, he got to the free throw line 14 times. So like, he's now starting to figure some stuff out. And then the way the draft fell, they end up drafting Jalen Suggs. And like, that's a, you know, that's a tough one, not to, for him from the standpoint, no matter what, and Jalen's going to be a good basketball player. And I think those guys will be able to play well together. But it also meant he was going to have to share and not necessarily be given the ball or given the keys. And that was, he understood that. And he had a comment. He said, you know, this past offseason, my goal was to be the best version of me coming into the season. And he worked at it. And now, you know, he's starting to show what he can do. And, you know, he's always been motivated. But like, I go back to his mindset, man. That, you know, some guys, they want to be great. Like in the NBA, really in any sport, any pro sport, not everybody wants to be great. Everybody wants to be good. But when you, to be great, to be one of those guys, man, you got to have a completely different mindset. You got to have a short memory. And you got to have an alpha male mentality about you. And so he's got those things. And so I'm just excited for him to watch his journey. And we talk basketball ad nauseum. Like, yeah. He just, you know, we just talk because he's always trying to improve. And now he's also now learning how to improve, because that's another element of it that he's figuring out. So it's fun, man. I'm pumped. I'm excited for him. He's got a great situation. They got a lot of good young talent. And he's going to continue to play at and I don't say this just as a dad, but I do, because I do know his inner workings. Cole's going to have a chance to be a special player in this league.
I agree with all of that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the on our next Olympic team.
That's saying a lot. I couldn't even imagine something like that. But
he already didn't he play on the FIBA America's Under Champion?
He played on the 18U team. He did. Yeah. He did.
So I think he should be in that pipeline in the next 2 years.
Well, you know what? If the team continues to develop and progress, and he does, yeah, you know, you got to remember the kids, you know, he's only played, 17, 18 games. He still hasn't played 82 games yet.
Yeah.
You know, but what he's showing, like, is he's wired for it. He loves it. You know, he's also about winning. Like, he plays to win. Like, he's not just he's trying to win. And I think a team like Orlando, like, they're struggling right now, obviously. But, you know, coming into the season, you got to think about it. Most people would have said the two best players on the roster were the two guys who haven't played a game this year.
Right.
If you just have that perspective and you say, well, let me take the two best players off of all of these teams in the league, where would they be? You know, you take Draymond, because coming into the year, Klay wasn't there. But you take Draymond and Steph off Golden State. You take LeBron and AD. You take Harden and Durant. You take Giannis and Chris Middleton. You take those guys off because everything's relative. But when you coming into the season, those are the two best players on the roster, and they haven't played a game. And so that takes a big toll on a young team where you got a bunch of guys that have never won in the NBA. They had the youngest starting lineup in the history of the NBA to start the season.
Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't even know. Yeah, but they're going to be good. They got a good young coach. They're learning. They've been in their last four games. Like, they're starting to have a chance to win and starting to understand what you have to do in order to have a chance to win. And that's a big process, man. To have to figure out, and they're learning. And I think they're going to start to, I think as this season gets closer to the midway point in the second half and they start to get a little healthier, they're going to be a good basketball team from that point on, because these guys are getting valuable experience and understanding and learning an identity. And there's a lot of good. And I say that because, trust me, I've never watched this much of a team with a bad record in my life. because you literally, as a fan, you literally watch every game.
Oh yeah.
So I've watched a lot of that, you know, those losses, but I'm watching them now with an analytical eye and trying to see how pieces fit and, you know, what ceilings are and what the growth pattern's going to be and, you know, the things that the versatility level of guys and how they fit. And so, you know, it is fun to do that. And then obviously that being my son, and we talk a lot about that stuff, man. So it's awesome, man. It is. I could not have a greater blessing in terms of what that creates for he and I, you know, him being my firstborn.
Yeah. I mean, it's my firstborn played in a fifth grade scrimmage. And I think I thought about it all day before I went. I just think it's cool. You think about it all day, and it's a freaking Orlando Magic game
that
your son's playing it. I mean, just on so many levels. And the best part about all this, you talking about him, is his adversity. You know, like you said, he cried like a baby before surgery. Yeah. I mean, he had no idea. You know, I don't know what age you might have told him that you never met your father, but like that's adversity. And the fact that just what I'm saying, like, you're right. There's basketball adversity. There's life adversity. You didn't have a father in your life. And yet you, irrespective of whether you and his mother were getting divorced and you married your second, it didn't matter. You were always in his life. And I think that, to me, I salute you, because that to me, when all is said and done, you find out that don't matter whether he was going to become a dentist like your wife now or an NBA player, that's what it's all about. And so anyway, man, I'd have to give that up to you. Does he know about your past and everything? Did you talk to him about that?
In terms of
your own father, you know, you never met him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He knows. Absolutely.
Did he pass away? Did your own father pass away?
No idea. Never had any connection or communication to him. Wow. So, yeah, I had my grandfather, who was instrumental in my life. He passed away my freshman year in college.
Okay.
And so I had that. And my grandma was really instrumental in my life as well. It's not to say that I didn't have family, of course, but, you know, it's different not having a father, you know, but you don't even understand that. Like, I didn't understand it.
It was just your life.
Until I had him, I really didn't understand the impact of not having a father, and so yeah, that, but that was also, it made me say, no matter what, I was going to be in my kid's life and just be there and be present, you know, and be there for them. So I've been blessed in that regard. And like you said, the reward for me now is I get to watch all my kids basically pursue their dreams.
Well, let's end it on that, because that's great. And, I root for you more as a person than I do an analyst, but they all go hand in hand. So it was good catching up with you.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, brother. You guys be safe. Bruce, take care.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
It's time to wrap things up. I'd like to bring in my producer, Bruce Bernstein, to help land the plane. Any quick thoughts on your old pal, Greg Anthony, Bruce?
Mike, when I worked with Greg, one of the things that I always was so impressed with him was that not only was he really smart about the game of basketball, he was one of the smartest individuals on any number of topics. And I loved the comments that he made during the interview about how one of the biggest problems in our society is the polarization, how we've lost the ability to disagree without considering the other person evil. It's that kind of leadership and that kind of mindset that we need to help bring our society back to a better place. And it would be wonderful if Greg ever ran for office. I think he would be amazing.
That's a great thought from you, Bruce. That's still enough out of you. Now, please hit us with the promos.
Yes, Mike. Thank you so much. And thanks to our editor, the great Drew Rich. Please check out all of our Pure Hoops Media shows. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin drops on Wednesday. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt and King McClure is here on Thursday. BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman will hopefully return soon with the Pure Hoops podcast each Friday. And of course, the Mike Wise Show is a Monday staple here at Pure Hoops Media. And don't miss some of the choice bite-sized discussions from all of our shows and our Pure Hoops Media quick hitters. Plus, we have nearly 200 great video segments on our YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and search for Pure Hoops Media. Mike.
I don't care if it's Kyrie's fault. I don't care if the Nets are at fault for distancing him from everything. Still, Greg's vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. Bruce vaccinated. To me, it's just, you can have a personal belief, but if it's not a medical condition, I still believe that you owe it to yourself and society to do so. Adios. Aloha. And hasta luego, mi muchachos.